So good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming on this Sunday morning. As some of you know, in terms of our community, we, over these past couple of years, have been attempting to kind of be more comprehensive in our approach to sharing and teaching the ways of mindful living, mindfulness, the Buddha Dharma, and to create, as we have grown, to create greater unity among our various communities and people who live away. So we have now these 6-9 month periods of what we call paths of awakening. This year, our path of awakening, which began in September, we call mastering the fundamentals. The idea being that, spiritual life, meditation, teaching, Buddhism, and many different teachings, many different practices, many different types of technique, and one can lose sight of the most important thing are the fundamentals. You get the fundamentals right and everything will unfold smoothly. But if you don't get the fundamentals right, there will always be problems. Will always be back and forth, up and down, in and out. With the practice, not with the practice, things are going well, things aren't going well, and to develop that consistency in our healing and transformation, we need a strong foundation. We need to master the fundamentals. So back in the fall and early winter, we focused on mindful living, kind of the basics of mindfulness practice, breath practice, and just how to bring mindful living into one's daily life. And we used the Buddha's fundamental teaching on that, the four foundations of mindfulness, 2,600 years old, and yet, as we found, and still incredibly relevant and insightful to the human condition. Beginning March, April, May, we are kind of developing a second phase of these fundamentals, and this has to do with the fundamental teachings of Buddhism, which is called Dharma, the way of truth. Truth not meaning truth as opposed to false, but meaning truth that we can readily find if we observe life deeply. It is a truth that is truthful for all human beings, whether you're Buddhist, non-Buddhist, whatever your religion, the fundamental or non-religion, the fundamental facts of human existence are common to all of us. And this, of course, was what the Buddha taught from. He didn't teach from theology. He didn't teach from dogma. As far as we know, they didn't read even. It was basically from his own experience of observing his own mind, his own life, and looking at the lives of people around him, that he discovered these truths, which then became encapsulated over the years in various kinds of teachings. So we're going to look at those. Because unfortunately, mindful living is not enough if we really want to, if we really seek transformation. We need to have... mindfulness is the basis, but without some sign of understanding, some type of insight into the human condition, into our mind, into why we suffer, and what creates happiness. Without that clarity, we'll always be stumbling about. So over these next 3 or 4 months, we will be looking as a community more deeply in the fundamentals. Many of you know that within our community, our members often participate in these intensives. We have an intensive that's actually beginning tomorrow. And it's interesting, we have 103 people participating. So that's quite a significant commitment that many of our members are making to really, over these next 3 months, involve themselves in deepening their understanding and their practice. of the fundamentals of the Buddhist teaching. Today I wanted to talk about, so again, most of the, all the talks over these next 3 months will be on this these fundamentals. But today I wanted to continue with what I began several weeks ago, and I'm just picking some out. Again, for those of you who, who have memory and remember, when I was here last, I was teaching from this book, Into Being, and the these 14 guidelines for engaged Buddhism that come from the Thich Nhat Hanh tradition and are the one of these 14 fundamental trainings of this order he founded called the Order of Into Being. All these talks are on through the website or online, so if you're interested, you could listen to the first one, in which I gave, I think, more background on the order and where these came from. The last time when I was here, I looked at number 7, which is aware that life is available only in the present moment and that it is possible to live happily in the here and now. We are committed to training ourselves to live deeply each moment of daily life. We will try not to lose ourselves in dispersion or be carried away by regrets about the past, worries about the future, or craving anger or jealousy in the present. We will practice mindful breathing to come back to what is happening in the present moment. We are determined to learn the art of mindful living by touching the wondrous, refreshing, and healing elements that are inside and around us, and by nourishing seeds of joy, peace, love, and understanding in ourselves, thus facilitating the work of transformation and healing in our consciousness. Okay, so there's a lifetime of a wonderful transformation in that. And again, if you're more interested, please go on the website and you will find that talk, which again gives commentary line by line. But today I wanted to look at another one, which is interesting, and then we'll have time for questions and answers afterwards. Which is the fourth mindfulness training. And this one reads, aware that looking deeply at the nature of suffering can help us develop compassion and find ways out of suffering. We are determined not to avoid or close our eyes before suffering. We are committed. And again, these are kind of, as I said, trainings or commitments that people in the order take at their ordination. So that's why it says we are committed. So people who are in the order, this is their commitment. We are committed to finding ways, including personal contact, images, and sounds, to be with those who suffer, so we can understand their situation deeply and help them transform their suffering into compassion, peace, and joy. So again, you know, these are very short, but quite profound, and very practical. They are teaching us how to be in the world. So it begins, aware that looking deeply at the nature of suffering, and we know in the Buddhist teaching, you know, the earliest teachings of the Buddha, the Four Noble Truths. The first noble truth is suffering, right? And we know that it was in the Buddha's own personal life that when he kind of got out of his bubble, remember, he was in a bubble of ease, a bubble of luxury, a bubble of, you know, all his needs taken care of. I mean, he lived very in a protective environment, right? He was not exposed to really what was going on in life of most people. But when he was exposed, when he was shown real life examples of people who suffer, he was struck deeply, and he was moved to ask questions. So this is important, aware that looking deeply at the nature of suffering. Most of us, as individuals and as society, we don't like this, right? We want to look at nice things, right? I mean, we want to have fun. Isn't that what life's about? Right? Let's have fun, right? So we want to have fun. We want to have good times, right? We want to see the pretty things in life, right? We don't want to deal with suffering, do we? Because suffering is what? It's not pretty, is it? Suffering's not pretty. And suffering doesn't, you know, it's not a good feeling when suffering. You know, so we don't like it. We want to walk around it. We don't want to drive through those neighborhoods where there's suffering. We like driving through the nice neighborhoods, don't we? We don't like to drive through the neighborhoods where there's lots of suffering. We don't like to see people who are suffering. And even more so, many of us don't even want to deal with our own suffering. We don't want to look in our own suffering. The suffering we carry with us from our past, the suffering that we're experiencing in the present, we don't want to deal with that, right? So there are things that we call what? Denial, repression, suppression, addiction, you know, endless kinds of addictions with all kinds of substances, or shopping, or keeping busy, or you know what I'm saying, or on the internet. We have endless diversions. So we don't have to acknowledge our own suffering, or the suffering of those around us, maybe those we live with, or those we work with, or, you know, within our families, or even more so the suffering of that is widespread in our world. And again, in the Buddha's teachings, and actually we had a retreat last week, and I think shortly, if not already, those talks will be online. And we did spend a lot of time really looking in the Buddhist tradition, how, you know, what is meant by suffering. It's not often the way we think of it. Suffering's a very the word dukkha in Buddhism is much more than the pain of life. I mean, stress could be suffering. You know, being feeling stressed, a little stressed, being a little irritated, being lonely. Feeling alienated or separated. I mean, all that, disconnected, all that would be considered suffering. So, this is the first challenge, right? Are we willing to stop living in our fantasy worlds? Right, and a fantasy world, it means a world that is not based in reality. Is that clear? The Buddha is not a harbinger, he's not a messenger of bad news. Right? All the Buddha does and all the Buddha's teaching does is have us look at reality. Right? So what are the facts? Right? So we need to, again, stop living in fantasy. Fantasy means what? Not real. Anything that is not real is fantasy. Many people spend lots of their life in fantasy. You know, we think fantasy is something like science fiction, or that whole, there's a kind of literature, you know, fantasy novels and all that. But most human beings live in fantasy about themselves, about their lives, about their future. You know, we don't, so we want to come out of fantasy. Fantasy is not real. Fantasy is not true. We want our lives to be reality-based. So our healing and transformation and our happiness can be reality-based. Most people, unfortunately, do not find their happiness in reality-based. They have to do things. They have to create fantasies, illusions, that they can get happiness here and they can get happiness here, and they, you know, all the things that people do. But it's a fantasy because it doesn't really produce what they want. It's not true. So this is the first challenge. Am I willing to look deeply at the nature of suffering? My own suffering. And again, it's an interesting word. He says the nature of suffering. You know, what is the nature of suffering? What is it when I am suffering? What am I actually experiencing? Right? What is the nature of suffering? When other people are suffering, what is the nature of their suffering? Is all suffering the same? Same type of suffering, same intensity, same duration, same storyline? Or are there many different types of suffering? But is there a common nature to all suffering? And looking deeply in the Buddhist tradition means to look under the surface too. Right? So when we look deeply into the nature of suffering, we are going from the first noble truth, which is the truth of suffering, into the second noble truth, right? Looking deeply means, where is it coming from? What's causing it? See, this is important, because if we are suffering, but we don't acknowledge it suffering, we don't call it suffering, right? People say, well, you know, I'm like everybody else, I'm coping. How are things going? Well, I'm getting by. I'm kind of coping with things. You know, stressed out, what is in everybody, right? You know, I mean, that's the way we talk to one another, right? That's it's rather than going, you know, I'm suffering. You know, how are you? You know, that could be a conversation stopper right there. You notice that a lot of times when you do kind of talk that way, people quickly change the subject, you know what I mean? Like, see any good movies lately, or, you know? Because we don't want to be authentic. We don't want to speak the truth. We don't want to be a party pooper, right? Because in our society, we try to we say what? Everybody's having a good time, right? Just keep shopping. Everybody's having a good time. Just keep consuming. You know, but nobody wants to admit what's underneath that. So again, aware that looking deeply at the nature of suffering. Well, this is big. I mean, I'm just speaking of a little bit today. This is so important. You know, to really. Are we willing to acknowledge honestly and openly where in my own life, in my own being, in my own relationships, do I suffer? And again, willing to name it, and then going, well, what is causing it? You see? Because, again, Buddhism and the Four Noble Truths are about the cessation of suffering. So if you want to end something, you got to know what's causing it. Right? If your car is not working right, you want to know what's causing it. If your AC isn't working right, you want to know what's causing it. Right? You know, if you're sick and you go to the doctor, you go to them because you want to know what? What's causing me to suffer? When you understand what's causing you to suffer, then you know whether, you know, what can be done around it. But if you're not willing to take that step of acknowledging, you know, I'm sick, you know, and trying to find out, why am I sick? Why am I not feeling well? You know? I mean, many people, you know, they have stomach problems, and what do? They just keep popping pills, right? You know? They never go and say, well, why do I have stomach problems? Could it be somehow a relationship to what I eat, or the way I eat? You know what I'm saying? I mean, obvious questions. Except in our society is very good at giving us simplistic remedies. Right? Simplistic remedies. You know, my car is not working. Well, I'll just get a new car. Oh, that's kind of expensive. Right? Maybe it'd be simpler to kind of look and see, you know, what could be causing it, and then finding the remedy. Right? Aware that looking deeply at the nature of suffering can help us, and again, this is the answer to those of us who might go, well, you know, yuck, you know, suffering is not pleasant, it's messy, it doesn't feel good, it's not pretty, it's sometimes ugly, you know? I don't want to look at it. But he says here, Thich Nhat Hanh saying, can help us develop compassion and find ways out of suffering. So is that clear? This is the answer to why to do it. I'm doing it so I can find a way out, and also because I want to develop compassion. So, again, these are simple little statements, but they are profound. They are transformative. They will totally change your life in a very good way, because you have to ask yourself, do I want to find a way out of suffering? See, that's the challenge here, right? Do I really want to end my suffering? It's a very simple question, isn't it? Not do I want to cover it over, not do I want to palliate it, not do I want to soften it, not do I want to prettify it, right? Not that I want to learn to cope with it better, right? But do I really want to find a way out of it completely? Right? So these are the kind of questions we usually don't think about. And these may not be the kind of conversations that we have with each other. But yet this is the most fundamental, important conversation that we could have with ourself, with our children, with our loved ones, with our, you know. It's like, you know, do you want to continue to suffer? You know, what you're going through, it's suffering. You know, do you want to continue? Would you rather not? You know, do you want to look with me into the nature of our suffering? Your suffering, my suffering. So we can find a way out. So we can be what? Free of suffering. Free of suffering implies what? Happiness, well-being, ease, right? So, and develop compassion. Compassion is a very central word in the Buddhist teaching. In Sanskrit, it is called karuna. And it's important to understand that it is the operating principle in the Buddhist tradition of how to be in society. You know, all the meditation work, all the mindfulness work, all the inside work, what is the fruit of that? A truly compassionate being. In Buddhism, a truly compassionate being, the word karuna, it includes empathy, but it is not, it is much more than empathy. It's important to understand that. Because empathy implies that one is in touch with or feels someone else's suffering, right? Present to another's suffering. But in Buddhism, in the teachings about what karuna means, it is not, that is the beginning. It means I am present, I am empathic to suffering, but I actively want to uproot it. So it sounds like part A, part B, but it's actually the same. Is that clear? You know, when you suffer, you know, and if you're sane, you what? You want to alleviate your suffering, right? I mean, if you're walking around and you have a thumbtack in your foot, if you are healthy, somewhat mentally healthy individual, you will what? You'll want to pull it out, right? You won't say, well, it's only the foot. You know, I mean, I got a whole body, I got lots of other parts. I mean, that's the foot's problem. It's got a little tack in it, right? I mean, it sounds crazy, doesn't it? because we understand that somehow the foot is somehow related to us, right? That somehow the foot and its suffering is somehow part of our body's suffering, right? And so when we are in touch with our suffering of our body, we respond by wanting to alleviate it. Is that clear? So it's that active component. When we are present to the suffering of the world and we know there is no separation, then not only are we in touch with it, but we want to help in some ways. Where the looking deeply at the nature of suffering can help us develop compassion and find ways out of suffering. So it is through this that we are able to be present to suffering, and we're able to look deeply into suffering, and we're able to be creative in our ways of finding outs. So therefore, he says, we are determined not to avoid or close our eyes before suffering. Is that clear? So this is the commitment. You know, I am no longer going to close my eyes before my own suffering. When I suffer, I acknowledge it. When I see the people around me are suffering, I am going to acknowledge it. Right? But it's only when I understand the roots, the causes, that I can really understand how to alleviate it. Right? This is so important. Because so much of helping is not helpful. Because we don't look into causes. We don't name it as suffering. So we do have this thing called human intelligence, right? It is a gift that we all have, a capacity that we all have to learn and understand, right? Everybody is born, unless there are significant impairments, everybody has that capacity for intelligence. Unfortunately, most people never develop that capacity. So we have all kinds of capacities. We have capacities, physical capacities, mental capacities. We have the capacity to potential to sing and to dance. I mean, we have all kinds of things that we can do, right? But if we don't develop them, if we don't use them, they will not develop. We have this capacity for intelligence, to be rational, to be logical, to be analytical, to look into. We all have that. But if we don't use it, it will not be developed. So the implication here is we are going to start using our intelligence to look at our own situation and the situations of others. We are going to look deeply into human suffering and the cause of human suffering so we can find ways out. But I think the most important thing here is we begin with suffering. You know, if you look at our political process now, it begins from what? Ideology. It begins from ideology. And through ideology, we look at problems. But if you look at situations firstly from suffering, you know, people, there's discussion about, what's the discussion? But there's discussions these days about income inequality, the minimum wage, you know, food stamps, you know. But there's no fundamental going. Yeah, people who are poor, people who work hard and cannot feed their families, find places to live, they're suffering, right? They're suffering. And when we all stop, whether we're right or left or middle or Republican, you know what I mean, and go, Yeah, these are human beings who are suffering. Right? This is not just, you know, we give it names like income inequality or this or that, but let's call it what it is. It's suffering. Right? People are suffering. What's causing their suffering? How can we alleviate that suffering? You know, it's a very different dialogue, and it's one that comes from the heart, right? It's one that comes from a sense of family and community, right? You know what I mean? In the same way, we laugh to think that somehow we would not pull the tack out of our foot because it's just the foot, you know, it's just like one little part of a much larger body with many different parts. I mean, what's the hurry, right? But when you understand that we are all one family, then when there is suffering in the world, we will acknowledge that these are our family, our cousins who are suffering. And we will be moved to want to look deeply into what's causing it. We determine not to avoid or close our eyes before suffering. And then the next line says, we are committed to finding ways, including personal contact, images, sounds, to be with those who suffer, so that we can understand their situation deeply and help them transform their suffering into compassion, peace, and joy. So this is, it's very personal, isn't it? We are willing to be in contact with those who suffer. I'm willing to be in contact with my own suffering, with people in my family who are suffering, people in my community who are suffering, you know? I'm willing to be in contact, personal contact, hearing sound, hearing their voices, hearing their cries, seeing the images, and acknowledging this is suffering. I'm not just gonna flip the page. When we see the pictures on the internet, on the TV, of people in war, and you know, they're suffering. We're willing to stop and go, these are human beings who are suffering. It's not just an image. There's a human being behind that. What if that was me? You know, in modern warfare, they talk about civilians' casualties as being what? Collateral damage. What an abomination, right? If that was your child, if that was your dear friend, who was just maimed, you know, would you be happy if somebody said, well, you know, there's always collateral damage in war? No. People who talk like that is because they have no compassion, no matter what they say. Because when you're a compassionate human being, you understand, you know, that people are suffering. And if you're willing to say, you know, that is my sister, that is my brother, that is my niece, that is my nephew who is suffering, they would stop. Right? Obama would stop the wars, wouldn't he? If that was his child who was just blown up. He wouldn't call it collateral damage and say, you know, that just happens. So this is a very profound teaching. You know, it really inspires us, encourages us, challenges us. We are committed to finding ways, including personal contact, images, and sounds, to be with those who suffer so we can understand their situation deeply and help them transform their suffering into compassion, peace, and joy. Right? So this is this is quite a quite a noble image, isn't it, of what it means to be a human being. To understand what really is our purpose in our life, our temporary life, our short life in this planet. What is our purpose? You know, what do I do with this human gift of this body and this mind and this heart? Right? Do I use these wonderful gifts that I have been given to help those who are suffering and to help them transform their suffering into compassion, peace, and joy? I mean, how's that for a life purpose? I mean, we often talk about, what is my life purpose, right? What am I doing here, and what do I want to do, and what's really my values? Well, this is a very ancient value. In Buddhism, for those of you who've maybe read something about Buddhism or have come here, you hear about that in Mahayana Buddhism, the ideal is this being called the Bodhisattva. How many people have heard the term? How many people haven't heard the term Bodhisattva? No. Preaching to the choir. Forgive me. So this is a Bodhisattva, right? A Bodhisattva is a man or woman, a human being, that sees that the basic central purpose of their life is to help. Help what? Help alleviate the suffering in all ways of people, and to transform their suffering into compassion, peace, and joy. I mean, I would imagine, if you ask most people who are at least a little bit of consciousness, what kind of world would you like to live in? And if you offered them a world where people were basically happy, were peaceful, and had compassion in their hearts, I think most people would say, I'd like to live in that world, right? Because it would only benefit us, right? Even if I was miserable, if I was a miserable, selfish SOB, right? I mean, if I was surrounded by people who were, always compassionate to me, and always, I'd say, well, this is great. This is a great world. So even out of selfishness, to be in a world with people who are happy and peaceful and compassionate is a wonderful thing. The Bodhisattva is also someone who has this ideal, has this aspiration, has this intention in their life to alleviate suffering and to transform the world in this positive way. But in it, the Bodhisattva is someone who understands that he and she can only contribute that when they become that, right? So this is the part that links this this kind of, we might say, activist, somebody who's actively wants to participate in the transformation of the world, how that relates to the inner work, the meditation work, the on the cushion work, the study work, because I understand that, a peaceful world can only be created by people who know how to be peaceful, right? People who don't know how to be peaceful within their own heart, mind, within their own life, within their own relationships, how could they create a peaceful world? Okay. Cause and effect. Only happy people create a happy world. Only compassionate people create a compassionate world. Only people with calm, open minds can create a world in which calmness and openness reigns. You can't legislate it, unfortunately. You can't enforce it, because these are human qualities. I mean, you can set up perhaps environments that nurture that, but the experience only goes on within each of us. So, you know, that is where the inner and the outer, the macro and the micro, you know, all become one. You know, and where you understand my own personal transformation is significant. It's not selfish, it's not self-indulgent, because if I can't get my act together, how can I expect anybody else to get their act together? Right? If I can't see my way out of my own suffering, I mean, how can I expect anybody else to do it? Right? So, this is the place where a theory and practice are one. Is that clear? You know, it's not, in Buddhism they say everything, the law of the universe is the law of karma, the law of cause and effect. You know, if the effect I want is to be happy, then I have to make sure that all the causes, which means all the actions that I'm doing with my body, all the actions that I'm doing with my speech, and all the actions of my mind are producing those kinds of effects. If they're not, then I will not be happy. I will be what? Unhappy. If the actions of my body, speech, and mind are causing suffering to myself or others, then those are, you know, that is the effects. And so when we look at it from the inside rather than from the outside, we see clearly how important this is. And I assure you, once you have developed skill and competency in stopping, in being present to your own suffering 100%, eyes wide open, no more illusions, no more fantasy, no more denial, no more repression, no more suppression, right? No more piecing it little pieces at a time. You know, bite the whole enchilada. It's right there in front of you. Once you have the capacity to do that and then look deeply into it to see causation, right? After that, it's quite easy. Or easier. But at least at this point, the lights are on. Right? The lights are on. When the lights are on, we can see what's here. When we see what's here, we can learn how to work skillfully and intelligently and compassionately with what's here. But if the lights aren't on and we're in darkness and we don't see what's biting us, all we'll do is what? Yeah, same old, same old. Aware that looking deeply at the nature of suffering can help us develop compassion and find ways out of suffering, we determine not to avoid or close our eyes before suffering. We are committed to finding ways, including personal contact, images, and sounds, to be with those who suffer, so we can understand their situation deeply and help them transform their suffering into compassion, peace, and joy. It is important that we understand the situation deeply. Or else we could be just wasting our time. Right? When we look at causation, whether it's my own suffering, whether it's social issues, these big social issues, what is really causing them? Before we just throw good intentions, you know, throw a few bucks at somebody. What is the cause of this? Right? And are we willing to look at that level? Right? Oftentimes we are in the presence of people who suffer and we don't look deeply and we think we're being kind-hearted or helpful, or at least it gets it off our back. And we throw a little something at it. And all we're doing is perpetuating the suffering. It it is important that we look deeply into these situations. Again, how do you become skillful? How do you become competent? Do your own work. Right? Once you have developed that skill with yourself, where you have looked deeply into your own suffering, you understand its nature, you understand its causes, you worked somewhat successfully to uproot it, you've seen the proof. Now, when you're dealing with somebody, you are speaking from experience. You have knowledge, you have wisdom, you have personal experience. It's not just conceptual, or it's not just, simplistic, you know. Niceness is not always helpful. We often trade in our real capacity to help other human beings, to really involve ourselves in compassionate action, with being nice. Many of us in this room are guilty of being overly nice. And overly nice can often be because we really don't have insight, or we're overly nice because we're what? What? Selfish, or we're afraid to speak the truth. I think we're afraid. We don't want anybody not quite happy with us. We don't want to rock the boat. We don't want to say or do anything that may get somebody a little bent out of shape. So we're what? We're nice. We're kind. And again, I'm not putting down niceness and kindness. But I'm also saying that we should not fool ourselves by it or be fooled by others. We want to look deeply into suffering, and we want to help alleviate suffering. Is that clear? So this is important. I think kindness can come from the inside, but kindness can also be imposed from the outside. We need to look at, where is my kindness coming from? Again, because if we are committed to a better world, then we want it to be founded on something deep and true, and not just covering it over with kindness. Is that clear? We don't just want to prettify up, right? You know, if something stinks, we don't want to just do air freshener. Right? A lot of people do that, right? Just air freshener. That doesn't take care of the problem, does it? And you know, these days they have all different kinds of air fresheners. You know. Used to be there were just a few choices. Now they're, very subtle, right? It's not even called that. It's called aromatherapy now. I mean, you can. But it's it's still, what are we covering over? What is it that we don't want to smell? Right. And so at some point we... this is a very, again, I think, profound. It's only one. It's actually two sentences long. Aware that looking deeply at the nature of suffering can help us develop compassion and find ways out of suffering, we determine not to avoid or close our eyes before suffering. We are committed to finding ways, including personal contact, images, sounds, to be with those who suffer, so we can understand their situation deeply and help them to transform their suffering into compassion, peace, and joy. Please think about that. Why don't we all just think about that for a moment, okay? So let us, let's kind of sit up like we're meditators. Close your eyes, and just for 5 minutes, just reflect on what has been shared and what that means to you. We've talked today about looking deeply at the nature of suffering as a way to help us find our way out of suffering and to develop compassion, and that we determine not to close our eyes before suffering. Please reflect. Are you in touch with your suffering first? Suffering that you may carry from the past, that still exists within you as suffering, and suffering that may be going on in the present. So that's the first one. Am I willing to, right now, just acknowledge that those places of suffering exist in me? And are you aware how these places of suffering that exist in you, that are historical, and those places that exist in you in the present, can you name them as suffering? And are you determined no longer to avoid or close your eyes before the suffering? And having named it, are you committed? Do you really want to be free of it? It's a very personal kind of conversation. Do you really want to be free of your suffering? And I guess right along with that goes, do you believe that you can be? Are we willing to be in touch with, present to our suffering, acknowledge it, past and present? Do we want to be free of it? And then, even more important, do we believe that is possible for us? Not everybody else, but just you at this moment. Keep the focus on you for now. We're usually much better at other people. But just keep the focus on you. Are you in touch with the places in your life that you still suffer, have suffering within you? Or in the present? Relationships or situation that are still characterized by suffering. Would you like to be free of that? And do you have confidence that you have that capacity? And then coming to your back to your life, the bigger context of your life, the life when you leave here today, you go back home, your relationships, things you do during the week, your work, your other activities. Are you clear how you would nurture this process? So it's not just a brief experience here today, kind of a one-time experience. But can you just imagine how you would go back into your life with this willingness to be present to your suffering, with this commitment to look deeply into it so you can understand its causes and to do actions that free you from it and from continuing to create causes that sustain this kind of suffering in your life. Can you see the change occurring? Can you imagine you doing, self-doing? And try to get specific. We're often very good at generalities, but bring it specific situations that you know occur. If you are committed to no longer suffering, experiencing those kinds of afflictive emotions, interactions, and you can see what's causing it, can you see how you could do things differently? If in your life you really only wanted to make positive actions in the activities of your body, speech, and mind,